Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Your Intention Matters, the podcast. Thank you very much for joining us today. My name is still Paul Madat. I am thrilled about this episode today. I have Marques Ogden, keynote speaker, podcast host, and protector of the QB. Marques, how are things, man?
Doing well, Paul. How about yourself?
I'm doing very well. Thanks. Listen, I appreciate you taking the time to be here. Listen, do me a favor. Say hi to everybody. Provide a quick intro, and then we'll jump into your story.
Hey, everybody. My name is Marques Ogden. I'm from Washington, D.C. I currently now live in Raleigh, North Carolina with my wife and two daughters. I'm a current national, international keynote speaker, executive coach, three-time best-selling author, and I'm a former NFL athlete.
Awesome. And so now, so I've been saying Marques, but you said it differently. Is that the Canadian accent coming out, or,
yeah,
or
did I get it wrong? I have a couple clients that are in Canada. One is in British Columbia, Vancouver. One is in Toronto, and they have that Marques accent. So it's all good.
It's all good. All right, good. Well, listen, thanks again for being here. You know, Marques, we were talking before I hit record that the title of the podcast is called Your Intention Matters, because that's the result you'll tend to get. And so I'm looking forward to you sharing your story. Shall we get going?
Absolutely.
All right, good. So with this podcast, I like to go back in time. So let's go back to Howard. Mm-hmm. Howard University, Washington, D.C., 2003. Mm-hmm. From my research on you, I know that you graduated with a background in finance. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious about the decision to go to Howard, because when I think about the breeding ground for professional football players, NCAA, I think of Michigan. I think of USC. I think of Notre Dame, Florida, Bama. I don't think of Howard. So I'm really curious about what drove you to Howard.
So for me, Paul, it was my father was a Howard graduate. And on top of that, it was the only football scholarship offer I got out of high school. Because when I left high school, Paul, I was 6'3", 6'3" and a half. When I got to Howard, I ended up being about almost 6'5" and a half, 6'6". So I grew about 2 to 2.5 inches when I left high school. And on top of that, my high school coach did not put out correctly my year. People thought I was a junior when I was a senior. So when I was at Howard, I was getting letters from like Florida, Florida State, you know, things of that nature. But for me, I was already locked into Howard. I was from Washington, D.C. My dad went to Howard. So I said, no, I'm going to stay right here. I'm going to pursue my degree as a my athletic career as a Bison and get my degree from Howard University. And don't forget, Paul, at this time, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, Howard was everywhere on TV, like Different World, Cosby Show, all different things, Martin, you know, all these things. You always saw Howard sweatshirts and Howard this and Howard that. So I actually just loved being at Howard.
So it made me laugh internally when you said, you know, remember, Paul, at that time, I was only 6'3". Like, I'm 5'7". Like, when you're saying you were short at 6'3", it kind of makes me laugh, right? So you grew a little bit here. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about, you go to Howard. Yep. Did you have a vision for making it to the show? Was it was that your path, or was it you're going to get your degree and if it happens, amazing? Or like, what were your thoughts with regards to once you finished, what was your game plan?
Let's be real, Paul. When you get one scholarship offer near the end of the recruiting process, you're just happy to go play football and not have your football career be over. So there was no thoughts of the NFL, no aspirations of that. I was like, yep, I'm going to go to college. I'm going to get my degree. If I end up playing year two, that'd be great. Be awesome. Right. Well, I ended up starting as a redshirt freshman at right tackle, and I was a four-year starter at Howard. And, you know, from there, I went to some all-star games, and I went to, you know, had a great combine, great workouts. And next thing you know, Paul, I'm drafted. I'm still today, Paul, the only offensive lineman ever drafted from Howard University into the National Football League. And it was amazing, and I loved it. And, you know, it was just an opportunity to carry on the legacy that my dad was able to start at Howard as a football player, and I continued on then went to the NFL from there.
Gotcha. So let's talk about 2003. You get drafted by the Jags, if I have that right. Mid-round, fifth, sixth round, was it?
Correct.
Okay, right. So sixth round, I think, is what it was. Were you at Radio City for that? Were you no?
So I was home. So, like, you know, if you're a first-round prospect, you go to Radio City. They had me projected, some people said maybe as high as third round. Some people said maybe as low as seventh or undrafted. So it was a wide range. And then I got drafted in the sixth round by the Jaguars, by Jack Del Rio, who is now the defensive coordinator for the Washington football team. And for me, being at home around my family and getting that phone call and then seeing your name on ESPN and knowing that there were only 252 players drafted each year to the NFL. That's it. Yeah. 252 are drafted. And I beat the odds and I was drafted to the National Football League. And that in itself for me was a huge accomplishment. All right, cool.
Okay. So I think that's fascinating what you just said. So what you just mentioned to me rang a bell, and that was there's only a handful of people in the world who even get drafted, but even that is no guarantee that you're going to start, that you're going to sustain anything as well. So when you got drafted by the Jags, was that like a holy cow moment for you? Or was it like, okay, now the work begins?
Oh, absolutely. The work begins because getting drafted is great, but staying in the NFL for a long period of time, I played for almost 6 years. To stay in the NFL on the average lifespan is about 1.2 years.
That's crazy low.
Really hard. And again, like you said, it's just the beginning of your journey. And you have to really equivocate that the hard work now begins, because now there's not maybe like a 3 or 4 year age gap, right? You could be 22 years old starting and playing against a guy that's like 33, 34. I mean, look at what happened with the Buccaneers, where the starting quarterback, Justin Fields, is 22 years old and Tom Brady's 44.
Yeah. Like, could be his dad.
40. Right. Exactly. So like, in the NFL, there is no age. There is no, certain like grade or things like that. This is grown men playing a game that's their livelihood. And you have to come every single day with the best of the best, or Paul, you won't make it.
So how many years are you in Jacksonville?
Two.
2 years. Okay. And so did you start right away?
I played my first year, didn't start right away, had to kind of work your way up, through the chain. And like anywhere else, you just got to kind of get in there and learn how to kind of play and kind of get into the program, and you have to kind of get into the system.
Okay, gotcha. So 2 years with the Jags. Why did you move on from the Jags? Was it your choice? Was it a combination of theirs? What happened?
So I had a falling out with my coach, and it's more, I mean, now, of course, I can say that it's all my fault. And I didn't really do a good job, Paul, trying to figure out from him what was it I could have done better. And as a result of that, I didn't have great communication skill sets, and I went to Baltimore because my brother was there. I liked the O-line coach. But looking back on it, I wish I would have had a sit down with my line coach, figuring out what was the gap. What was I doing that I could have done better? Just figuring out. Like I tell my clients today, especially kids I train, young kids, even my adult clients, figure out what you're doing wrong and how to fix it. Don't just look to go somewhere else, because going somewhere else does not mean it's going to work out better.
Your choice to go to Baltimore. So how much of a factor, the fact that Jonathan was there, played into it? Or was that a big factor, or was it just the right fit for you professionally as well?
It was a good fit for me because I really liked the O-line coach. The O-line coach was my brother's coach in college, was a great professional. I liked him. He liked me. And it was a great scheme, great setup, great guys, great locker room. Yeah, having Jonathan there was a bonus, but it wasn't the main factor because my brother was not the deciding person or who plays. So having a line coach that really I gelled with was important, and then that's why I ended up going there.
Okay, gotcha. As a guy who watches pro ball every Sunday just about, religiously, obviously, Jonathan Ogden, I know, decorated career too. You said at the start of the podcast that the average lifespan in the NFL is a year, 2 years. You made it 6 years. And Jonathan's career is just really 12 years, Pro Bowl, Super Bowl, championship, and so on. So I'd love to know, having Jonathan in the NFL in his career, how did that help you, and did it hurt you at all?
It helped me because it helped me to understand how to play the game at a high level and what it would take to be a pro and what it would take to be the best. And I got a lot of that education, information, knowledge from him, where other players couldn't get that from players unless they played in the NFL.
Sure.
The only downside, of course, is having to play against guys that would play against him and not have such great days at the office. And you have to deal with all that kind of stuff, which is, you know, that's
like the comparison. Minor.
That's football. I mean, that's football. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's just the way life is. But that was very minor. That was the only really downside. I don't really call that a downside. It was just part of the job. But the real benefit for me was getting that information, getting that knowledge when I really didn't know what to expect. He helped me to get what it was like, what was it going to be like, and then how to play the game like a professional and really master the craft. So that made it really a lot easier learning from him.
You know, you talk about your tenure in the NFL, a couple of years in Jacksonville. Was it 1 year in Baltimore?
1 year in Baltimore. And then what happened there was it was going great. And then my brother's, the O-line coach, ended up resigning because he wanted the OC job. And that didn't work out for him, unfortunately. So when that didn't work out, he resigned. And then they brought in Chris Forster, who ended up having the scandal in Miami with the hookers and stuff like that. Nice guy, but wasn't really a fan of my brother because my brother played football a certain way, didn't really have to be coached. And you know, he didn't like that. So then he ended up releasing me because of some things with my brother and things where, you know, you can't release Jonathan Ollins. It's not going to happen. So then from there,
right,
I went to Buffalo and was doing great in Buffalo. Loved it. Was playing. Great organization. My line coach was Jim McNally, Hall of Famer. He coached Anthony Munoz. I played for Mike Mularkey, who was a great guy. Things were going really, really well. Then we had the next then after that, for being there for about for almost 2 years, Mularkey and gets fired. Mularkey gets fired, and in comes Dick Geron. Then from there, new coaching staff, new regime. I was going to retire at that point. Then Tennessee called, and they needed some linemen, and worked out for a guy. His name was Lake Dawson, who played at Notre Dame. Played NFL strong safety. He was their director of pro personnel. Great guy. So I made the Titans, was going into my first year with them, was set to play. Things were going really, really well, competing. And then I had a back injury. And between that and then my father passing away the year prior, it was just like, you know, I just didn't feel anymore. I got a settlement. I moved on. So my career was a good career. And everywhere I went, except for Jacksonville, I wish I had done that differently. In Baltimore, the guy who loved me, gone. Just, you know, and I got a guy who wasn't a fan. But that's why I tell people that, like, that's the real world. Like, sports in the real world is so similar, because in sports, you could have a great career going, right, as a player with a coach that loves you, loves your style, loves everything about you. Next thing you know, a new coach comes in, that coach gets fired, resigns, whatever, doesn't like your style, doesn't like your play. For example, I know a guy who was a third round draft pick to an NFL team, and the team drafted him. He was playing for 2 years, doing really, really well. And yeah, he was starting a few games here, there, all special teams, doing great. Well, then that head coach gets fired. In comes the new head coach. And this guy says, I don't like small linebackers on my team. So you're gone. So this is a guy who was there for 2 years playing. That coach knew him from playing on that team, knew him, knew his game. But as soon as he became the head coach, he told my friend, I don't like small, undersized linebackers on my football team. Wish you the best of luck. And that was that.
You know, Marquez, you mentioned in that recap right there that it sounds like you lost your dad in your 20s.
I did.
And so I'm sorry to hear that. I hope it wasn't a long drawn out, but I'm sorry to hear that you lost your dad so young. Yeah, you're welcome. And so, you know, we talk about intention. We talk about mindset being the catalyst for everything out there. And so, you're at the top of your game in the NFL. That's where every pro and a pro football player wants to be. There's other leagues, but that's where everybody wants to be. Sure. You figured out a way to make it, and you're past the 1 or 2 years, and you're kind of figuring it out. Yes, you've gone to a couple of teams, and you've had some hurdles to overcome, and so on. Why do you think you were able to sustain the career you were able to sustain when the averages were against you or the odds were against you?
Well, Paul, like you said, it's all about mindset. Everywhere I went, I always had 100% workout attendance rate. I made every OTA. I made every community that I could. I invested myself fully in my job, my craft, and my team at the time I was on. And that's exactly what I feel helped me to sustain and have a long career where I'm now a vested player. I get a pension. I have a 401k. You know, I'll get benefits when I turn 55 because I was able to just do what I needed to do. And I didn't talk a whole lot about getting it done. I just did it. And the mindset was to figure out what needed to be done at all times, at all costs, and get it done. And that's what I bring to my work today as a speaker, a coach, a trainer. I live by my schedule, and I'm very itemized in how I do things. That was my problem early in my career as a speaker trying to get started. I was just very lackadaisical, not much focus, not much strategic planning, very poor to no tactical execution strategies. As a result of that, I got nowhere in my business. Where today, I'm focused. I know what I need to get done. I go on podcasts. We have a podcast. You know, I have sales calls. I mean, I'm always getting things done. My days move by a schedule. And I'm very, very specific on what needs to get done, which is why I feel our career today and our brand today has really rebounded or risen from the ashes, however you want to put it.
Fair enough. And I appreciate you saying that. I want to chat with you about life after football, but I'm curious about something. The Titans, was that your last go? Did you go anywhere else after
Tennessee? That was my last go.
In the NFL or in football?
In the NFL. I played a little bit after that in some indoor football because I wanted to just, I really enjoy the competition and I really just enjoyed being around like-minded athletes who wanted to, some guys were pursuing the NFL. Some guys, you know, knew they were going to be the NFL. Some guys were just, you know, guys that just enjoy playing, you know, what I call smaller football, you know, on smaller stages. And for me, it was big to help my career as a construction owner to help me meet people. And I loved it. I made a little money here, there, nothing crazy, but it was more about just building a network. And it was part of, I used it as a leveraging tool to help expand my construction company and my business in Baltimore after my NFL career.
Gotcha. And so let's talk about your NFL career, because, you know, when you see the media, or if you ever watch anything or you read anything about athletes, it seems to be the only stories that make it to page one are the ones where life after the sport sometimes isn't according to plan. Like, you'll see there's all kinds of stories about Allen Iverson, made all kinds of hundreds of millions of dollars, and apparently he doesn't have as much he does, but it's like, et cetera, et cetera. You don't hear the ones where they've financial plan, they take care of themselves, et cetera. And so when you were playing ball and you're in the NFL, how much time did you spend focusing on, well, what is my life going to look like after football? Or was it once you finished, was it, okay, now I'm going to start focusing on
that? That's what it was. And as soon as I finished, I started to try to focus on what was next. And that's why for 6 months, I was an alcoholic. I was depressed. I was on painkillers. I was on narcotics. I was just gambling, nightlife, because I didn't think about life after football while I was playing football. And I tell clients today, one of my clients I've done some work with is the Buffalo Bills football team. And I tell their players, yes, focus on the NFL, your job right now, being the best Buffalo Bill player you can be for yourself and the organization. But understand, football is not going to last forever. Even looking at Tom Brady, who's an anomaly at 44 years old.
Yeah.
Someday, don't know when, Tom Brady will retire. And then from there, what do you do? Now, again, I tell guys all the time, right? I don't tell the Bills players about this, but I just talk about this to guys that I just meet, you know, social media, retired athletes, whatever, especially football. There's very few spots for like the broadcast world. Peyton Manning and Eli have got it covered now Monday night, and they're actually phenomenal, right? Tony Romo does a great job, you know, calling games. You know, he does great. You know, and they only go after like the 1%, the 1%, the Jason Wittens, the Adam Archuletas, you know, Aikman. you know, the Chris Carters. Like, it's very, 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 very small. So I want guys, if that's what they want to do, go after it, absolutely. But there are also skills you might have that you might be able to utilize and go into other industries where you're not competing against retired us, Brotherhood, for the same allotment of smaller numbers of opportunity. So I'm very big on trying to tell guys to figure out, you know, if you want to go to broadcasting, great, awesome. But understand, if that doesn't work out, what are you going to go to next, right? What are you going to do? And again, I always tell guys, you know, do you think you're the 1% of the 1%? If you do, pursue it. If you don't, you might not want to become, I mean, look at Drew Brees. He retired, bam, he's Sunday Night Football. Like,
right.
How many, I mean, literally they pushed out Rodney Harrison for Drew Brees. But if he's not Drew Brees, he's not on Sunday Night Football calling the game. So
right.
It's just, it's a hard transition. So again, I struggled immensely for 6 months when I left the NFL.
Why was it only 6 months? And I don't say that like to minimize it was only 6 months, but why wasn't it a year? Why aren't you still battling?
Because I was able to figure out what I did well, and I wanted to try construction, and I met someone who was in my inner circle that presented me with the idea and said, oh, okay, this sounds interesting. And then I said, sure. And then I met my business partner, and then we went to work. So literally, it was time for me to make a change, and I didn't want to keep living my life in defilement of myself. Nothing wrong with having a drink and all, that's great. But like, much excessive drinking and much excessive night. None of this wasn't getting me anywhere. So I needed something better and something with more of a purpose. And so when someone brought me the construction company idea, I said, let's try it. And so that's when I started.
Were you married at the time? Were you a dad at the time?
Nope. No, I was single with no kids.
All right. So that's even easier to just kind of do what you want, sure. Right?
And now, I don't have anybody to check with or get the approval. Absolutely.
Gotcha. So when did you find your wife, or did she find you?
We met on Match in 2012.
Nice. You know, it's funny that you say the online because I met my wife in 2011 and we met on eHarmony. And if she's listening to this episode, she's going to cringe because she hates the fact that we didn't meet in a room, our eyes locked. There was like, she goes, how did we meet? We met on a computer. It's like, okay. So,
I'm the same way. I mean, my wife winked at me first through Match and we started talking through Skype and all that. And then we met in person. I met her in July 2012 and she came to see me for the first time in August 2012. And then that's how we started dating after that.
And was that your last first date?
Yes.
Was.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
So you're married now. You're a father of two, you said, right?
Correct.
All right. So what have you been up to post football?
So now I've taken my mess of failing in my construction company, filing Chapter 7 bankruptcy, losing my home, losing both my cars, losing all of my money.
Wow.
A week away from being homeless in 2013, being a custodian for $8.25 an hour, being a guy who was fired from two jobs in the same week, and a guy who hit his rock bottom moment of clarity as a custodian when somebody spoiled milk, rotten, nasty, protruding, you know, spoiled meat, spoiled milk, horrible garbage got over my body, my skin, and my clothes in 2013 September when I was a custodian. And I made the decision after that rock bottom moment of clarity to get my life back on track, to start living a life of not playing victim mode and being more accountable. And I launched my speaking career in September 2013. For the first 2.5 years, Paul, not one paid job, not one. Got my first paid job April 2016, 2.5 years later, learned the craft, worked hard, positioned myself. And now I've worked for 27 Fortune 500 companies in the last 5.5 years. I work for like NFL league office, NFLPA, to individual teams. I do consulting. I do coaching. I'm a three-time best-selling author. I'm a brand ambassador that owns parts of different businesses. I am a podcast co-host of the Levin Marcus Show. We are a 2% globally ranked podcast after only about 5 months of being out. We started May 3rd of this year. We have secured, as actually this morning, 20 sponsors, and we just actually secured our first Fortune 50 client as a sponsor, our first Fortune 50 brand as a sponsor of the show, which is very, very exciting. And, you know, Paul, we're just doing all kinds of great stuff, but I'm also the guy that was told no for 2.5 years. I'm the guy that, you know, looked at a paycheck, you know, weekly for like $311 after taxes and all that stuff came out because I was making that as a custodian, right? I mean, I've been the guy who's done all that, you know what I mean? And like, and that's really what it is. And so I tell everybody, I've been up, I've been down, I've been all around, but where I'm at today, I'm in a much better place.
You know, I imagine, Marquez, during that time, when you talk about $300 here and there, no real steady job income for a real extended period of time. I mean, there are people probably listening who couldn't go a week without a paycheck or 2 weeks without a paycheck. It's that tight sometimes. You go a real long period of time there. And I have no doubt that it was no picnic for you at all, of course. And you're trying to figure it out and you're trying to figure it out. And then all of a sudden, I imagine, and you keep me honest here, that that became just your reality. That became, this is the way it is. And yet here you are, you figured it out. And I'd love to know how you did that. So do you recall a moment where enough is enough now after this?
So the rock bottom moment of clarity, Paul, got me to think, right? But then I came home that morning and I sat down at my broken down Walmart desk because we didn't have any much money. I mean, we barely got by. Some months we would get by with just enough. Some months we were in the black, having in the red, and having to balance things. So I came home that morning after that rock bottom moment of clarity, and I wrote down my three biggest strengths. I was a good communicator. I wanted to help people. I was a good storyteller. And from there, I got my mindset, started to reshift, started to refocus, that if I could just really focus on what I do well, I might have a chance of getting out of the situation. Or if I keep focusing on what I do wrong, I'll always be in a negative mindset. I'll always be self-doubt, no belief in myself, and I'm not going to move anywhere in life. I'm just going to be here for the rest of my life. So that was the moment when I sat down at that desk and wrote down my three biggest strengths, Paul. That's what got me saying, okay, I know what I can do now. Now let's figure it out. What does that mean for a career? And I worked a lot of main jobs, Paul. I was a football coach, you know, private lessons. I was a birthday party clown, right? For people laying kids with football.
Wow.
I was a custodian. I was a runner of equipment for construction companies out to job sites. I was a part-time estimator for a construction company. I worked 707 football camps. Those are like my main jobs. While my side hustle was pursuing speaking. And then eventually in 2020, you know, when the pandemic hit, after all that I've done for different clients and businesses, I made my side hustle my reality and my main source of income.
So last thing I want to chat with you about here, because I know that you've got another appointment we got to get you to here, but let's talk about the last 18 months. This has been uniquely unique for the world. And, you know, I've taken some not, you know, just solace out of the fact that the entire world has been going through this. This is not my industry. It's not your space. It's not
everybody.
Everybody. So, you know, it comes over to North America, March of 2020, the world shuts down and we've now been trying to figure it out ever since. And then here you are figuring your stuff out as well. You start a new business. You make your side hustle, your hustle. And how have you done that in the middle of a pandemic when waters are still pretty choppy out there? There's companies that aren't hiring. There's companies that are still on freezes with expenditures and so on. And everyone's virtual still in a lot of circles. And so how do you think you've done it and how's it been going?
I really focused on what I could do versus what I couldn't do. We could do virtual talks like this, virtual webinars. We could do Zoom calls. And I landed a nice consulting client at the beginning of the year before it started. And I started working with them. I said, well, heck, if I work with them like this once a month with one group and another group, if I work with this organization for 2 hours a month, one group 1 hour, one group another hour virtually, heck, I could do this for everybody else. So that opened us up to doing more virtual webinars and things of that nature. And then I took that. I got on a lot of podcasts in 2020. I was a guest on a lot of podcasts. And that helped to position our brand as a respected thought leader to people, which when I would go on the phone to talk about maybe coaching them or working with them, the conversation was not as hard to get them to see the value because they already heard me on a podcast or heard some of our content. Then I did a podcast later in last year, beginning of this year, with my co-host Lever on his show. Then we met and then we decided to launch our own show in March of this year. And we got together and we actually officially launched on all platforms May 3rd of 2021. And then there's this, and people started to come back to doing things in person a little bit last year. We were available. We went and got our COVID shots, our shots to Pfizer because I wanted to get back on the road. People started to have us in their office. We just did a lot of pivoting, a lot of tweaking, like the great Charles Darwin's quote, it's not the strongest that survives or the smartest, it's the ones that can adapt the most.
Love it.
I tell people the other day, I do this for a lot of my clients. Change is when things happen around us we can't control. The pandemic was change, but transition is how you adapt to the change. That you can control. Open mindset, be innovative, be inventive, be an active listener. Have your circle of support to talk to if things aren't going well so you remain cognitive, not emotional. These are all moving parts of it. So we were able to just focus on, Paul, what we could control, and what we couldn't control, we let it go. And we figured out what we could do, and not focused on what we couldn't do for people.
Marquez, man, you've had quite the ride. Howard University, you extend the legacy of the Ogden family there. You start, you get drafted into the NFL. The Jags take you. Great moment, I'm sure, but now the work begins. Couple years in Jacksonville, you go play with your brother in Baltimore. Things don't work out there for a couple of reasons. You go to Buffalo, close to where I live. Great run. You go to Tennessee, a bit of an injury. You play around a little bit here in Europe and inside football, arena football and so on. And then you hit rock bottom. And it sounds like we just skimmed the surface here, but it sounds like really rock bottom. I'm talking like really rock bottom here. You figure it out that this isn't what you want for your life. You make the change, mindset, intention, you figure it out, you get married, you're a dad, and now you have a flourishing business in uncharted waters. And so I have to say, man, congratulations on what you've been able to create thus far.
Appreciate it, Paul. And I tell everybody, it all comes down to your ability to be intentional with your mindset. The only thing you can control when it comes to business is your mindset, right? Well, that's the main thing you should control. Yeah. And you control that and you use that as a powerful weapon, not a potentially, sharp, enemy weapon against you, you have a chance. But the minute that turns from being your tool to something that could hurt you as a weapon that might cause you harm, that's when things go awry.
Marquez, thanks so much for being here, man. It's been great to talk to you.
Paul, I appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot.
You bet. All right, everybody, let's wrap up another episode. Remember, your intention matters. Why? Because that's the result you'll tend to get. We're out of here. We'll do it again next week, and stay safe, everyone.